Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
There is a place where time stands still. Where nature is harsh and demanding, where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Took it in the guts, Barry.
Far away from my...
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
Yeah, you go to the greatest little country in the world. That, of course, is Australia at the moment, because that's where we are. And you're on 3CR with Annie on Showreel. And as Joe said in the previous program, he did meet me at the Nova because the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival is on, and I've been doing a few things with them. And if you hadn't noticed, and today we're going to have some conversations with some of those filmmakers. The first one is Gina Lida-Reese, and she was involved in the making of The Dead Parents Club. What a fantastic film. It's actually a sort of a collaboration between a theatre group and the filmmaker, and it's going to be screened on Friday, tomorrow, the 17th of July at 6:40 p.m. There's going to be an introduction, and as you'll hear from the conversation that I had with Gina, that it's a very, very interesting affair. We're going to follow it with a conversation I had with Pippa Samara, whose film Wide Horizons has already been screened at the festival. And if you get a chance, you should go out of your way to have a look at it. It's about an investigation of a fantastic dance troupe called Dance North. It comes from Townsville, and it's about them. It's about a tour, and it's also about the community that they create. It's only an excerpt from the conversation I had with Pippa, but you can get the longer form of the conversation from the podcast. But anyway, let's get on with chatting about the Dead Parents Club.
Thanks, Gina, for spending some time with me about this very interesting film, Dead Parents Club. It's part of an AFIDS production, and you're filming a production as it's being produced. How did that happen?
It's very layered. It's kind of Lara is a dear friend of mine, and so we co-directed this film together, but she was the director of the performance, so she's the director of AFIDS, and she kind of asked me to kind of come on board to document the performance process, and like, you know, hoping to make it into a documentary like later down the track. But we didn't know exactly what the documentary was going to look like, so it was very much like on the fly, kind of figuring out what kind of stood out to us as the process kind of unfolded. But the whole performance itself was very like collaborative, and so like the performance started, you know, without a real script, like without a kind of a clear idea. It was about kind of coming up with this, with the premise together as the ensemble cast. And so for me, it was kind of like being a part of that, so seeing how the process unfolded. Yeah, it was an incredible experience. It was really became totally embedded in this whole world. I feel like I should out myself. I have not lost a parent, so I'm a kind of voyeur in this space.
I've got to underline the fact that AFIDS bills itself as a Melbourne-based artist-led organisation creating subversive, radical, public art and cross-disciplinary performances. And And this is why the film is so amazing, actually, and the way they make their art is so amazing, is that it actually pushes the boundaries of time and space and order, which is basically the basis of the Western society that we're encapsulated in, correct?
Very well said. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I mean, they're very two different forms, performance art, kind of like exploring that exact idea through performance art looks very different to exploring it through documentary. And so I think that that was one of the biggest things of kind of figuring out when we needed to kind of explicitly say or kind of like develop character versus like the really important messaging underneath around this tension between wanting to everything to be tied up in a bow, like kind of the three act structure, the Western model of understanding narrative, but also understanding grief, versus the kind of performance, more experimental space. So yeah, it was really incredible. And I'm not a performance artist, so Lara was very much like taking me into her world, and I got to kind of be a part of it, which was cool.
Yeah, I think so too. The notion that she started off with, and it was a personal journey because it's about people who have lost their parents, and she wasn't particularly careful about the ages of people. There were older people and there were younger people, and there were people in the middle who had lost their parents. But all of the people were in different phases of grieving. And this particular type of art, a performance, I mean, it started off, quite ordinarily, because she t starts talking about how many orphan tropes there are in the world out there. And I was actually going to say that I've got a daughter, and when she was playing with her friend with her Barbies or her miniature dolls, they used to start their game with, they say, "And all the parents are dead." And then they start their game.
Oh,
And so it's all about
that's so
power,
funny.
right? Yeah, it is. That's why I bring it up. But when she points out that there's so many orphan tropes in the Western framework, you realize, of course, she's completely correct. But then it's like holding on to a string with all the different, even the players don't even know why they're there until they divulge themselves in their grief. It's quite amazing, isn't it?
Totally. Yeah, it really is. And I think it was a working out process for Lara herself as well. I was the same. I didn't wasn't quite aware how many Disney or like ch childhood kind of favorite classics were orphans. And then when you start to think about it, it's really hard to think of anyone who any character
Isn't.
who hasn't lost a parent yet. And I think that the question is like it's not a coincidence. There's clearly a reason, narratively, why it makes sense to like kill off the parents. And it's about like, yeah, power and emancipation, the idea of like freedom. It's a catalyst for, the hero's journey. That tension that Aphids really plays with, this idea of like fantasy and reality, if someone with lived experience, that kind of can really stand out to you as to how it's the orphan trope is framed and used as a way to kind of like get the character moving and kind of have this whole adventure and journey, it versus reality to like how grief kind of lingers and stays with you, and it's not this kind of very clear, tied up journey that a child or anyone of any age goes on. So the kind of underlying tension that they're figuring out, but you're totally correct. At the beginning, really didn't have a real understanding as to what everybody was kind of doing. And it was just really remarkable to see this like emotional journey of the individuals and as a collective coming together and like becoming a family.
And Lara, what a magnificent mind. She was being intuitive in her exploration and so powerful in the leadership of the performance without being a leader, if you know what I mean. It's very compelling filmmaking. And of course, you got to go behind the scenes to not just the building of a show to its status, but to the clothing that was chosen as well as people finding the movements that they were going to use in character.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, that was really amazing to see how that actually played out. Like, it really truly was a collaborative space. Lara had one-on-one kind of sessions, and even, you know, when the camera wasn't there, it was still constantly going on. The one-on-one sessions was a way for Lara to discuss with the cast members like their own personal journey of grief, and then also their relationship to the character that they've been cast. So, for example, you know, like Annie or Paddington Bear, you know, all these orphan characters. I think the thing that was really impressive to me about seeing Lara work was that she's kind of always listening. And you don't realize that even when they're having very kind of candid, casual conversations or really emotional conversations, she's like listening. And then, you know, in the next session or in the next kind of cast like rehearsal, she will have like embedded something in there that like was just part of a casual conversation. And that's a real skill to be able to be constantly actively listening with the cast members and making sure that each of their stories is embedded in their own character through the performance. And I don't think they even realized how much they were like, there was like, yeah, therapy throughout this whole thing until really kind of the end, that they had all kind of come together and had this amazing experience.
It was very layered. You talked about it before as being layered, and as a filmmaker, you straddle two different types of mind spaces. You're being practical and getting shots, but also you're observing the people as they're making this theatrical but also personal emotional journey, which is, I guess, what Aphids is saying, that all art is a personal and emotional journey, and it's a collective element. But how did you obviously, you found it very liberating in a way to be in that position.
Yeah, I did a film that was kind of like very observational, Queens of Concrete, which was, you know, over 8 years' time. So it was different. But this was, I really didn't feel, I think that the thing that really stood out to me was that I was initially very much kind of outer to this group, and I could feel it. And I think there was maybe a tiny bit of discomfort as well, because they were in a vulnerable space. And also, you know, a lot of them hadn't or practiced really talking about their grief publicly. Some of their grieving processes were very private. And like you said in the beginning, they were at very different stages. But I think over time, you know, they really did learn to trust me, and I was like just part of it. I was there. And I think they really valued, they started to understand how, important and unique this experience was. So having somebody there kind of is a bit of a, there's a comfort in that, just like knowing that this is not going to vanish into thin air, that this is kind of our story now documented. It was an interesting place to be in. I feel like documentary filmmaking is a kind of complex industry. I constantly am battling with trying to figure out whether I'm, you know, yeah, a voyeur, or whether this is for what purpose I'm kind of making films. But this was really like special because I learned a lot about grief in a way that I didn't know. And I mean, since then I've had my own grief in my life. So I think that it actually really helped me. It's not just, the audience isn't just people who have lost a parent, even though I think that it's really important for that kind of representation in this way. But it's also about, you know, just kind of being able to grapple with grief and see it, because we, as a society, we really do try and mask it and don't have ways to kind of really grapple in a collective sense.
I reckon that the AFID people, what they're doing is actually taking the agency back that humans have over their own lives, and taking a subject which is central to being human and making an actual dramatic piece about it is so contrary to the concept of an action movie. You know what I mean? Like, what are we allowed to make art about?
Totally. Yes. And I think that the kind of the sticky point that AFIDS, and also the I think the reason we really overlapped is because this idea of the commentary on popular culture and really kind of trying to unpack it and not just consume it. Like I've made a film about reality television, and that was kind of my fixation. And this, you know, orphan trope with Lara's fixation, I think that there is, yeah, there's a lot to be said around the way that we consume media and like material. And even, yeah, the fact that all these, there are all these orphan characters, it's fascinating. It's kind of a cool thing to realize, a kind of exciting thing to realize. But the question of why and the impact, even I remember one of the cast members was talking about how, like similar to your daughter, about how there is something like, exciting is the wrong word, but about being an orphan as a kid, there is something appealing about it, which if you lose a parent, it's something that you never want, you know, it's awful. And then maybe it's guilt about feeling that way, that desire to have lost a parent or both your parents. But it just makes so much sense because we're fed it so often. I think that there was something about the reason that each character was cast, their alter ego, their orphan alter ego, that I think is a really amazing therapeutic practice of trying to kind of externalize your grief, or yes, yeah, stepping into a character and looking at your grief in that way. And so all of this was really part of the performance.
I watched my 3-year-old grandson do that. He had some problem and then he became this other character describing the problem. And it was really interesting.
That's so interesting. Which wow, is that's amazing.
Exactly the same thing.
Yes, yeah, totally. And I mean, I'm not a therapist, so I can't say if this is, but there was something that I saw that was like, it was, yeah, you get to step away from your grief. It's like not you in a moment, but also it is, and you're kind of, they're kind of coming together, they're merging. Yeah, and I think it was just really brilliant to see the way that every single person like kind of initially fought with their character. They kind of didn't, they weren't really sure, or they were trying to figure out how to do it. And then over time it was really a part of it. And it was the characters and the real people like kind of always in the same room.
Yeah, yeah, they did actually, they fought it.
Yeah.
Like, why are you making me that person? I prefer to be this person. That's how I feel. The other thing is I was fascinated by the introduction of the dramateur and the practicalities of making sure that you had an art piece that wasn't just an internal facing, but an external facing thing, because people are going to come and watch it. And of course, that's the same with the film, isn't it? So the marries.
Yes, I know. It was kind of, I don't think I've ever done something so meta. I was like, kind of, I was almost like fatigued by how over the time I was like, everything, we are doing it right now. Like, this is what's happening. And I think that that was also a thing that, you know, Lara and I really went back and forth on, of how much to kind of include the performance behind the scenes of the performance and the way that it was structured. And it just made sense to us to put these little bits in. I mean, Mish, the dramaturg, is like so incredible and she's so brilliant. It was hard not to put more of her in because she was so good. You know, she's also not an orphan. And because of this, over time, we really saw that the cast members were, it was like, it was for them. There was also a performance really happening. So it was kind of like trying to get back to reality, like, let's make this performance. And in doing so, it was like we were also kind of commenting on the documentary that was being made, which was like, you know, we need structure. We need people to be able to follow what's happening. We can't just, you know, it's not just, you know, a bunch of people getting closer and closer. It's like there has to be more. And that's how narrative works. And it's interesting to bring it into the real world and trying to, figure it out. I'm glad that you kind of enjoyed that and you saw
I was wondering
the meta layering.
Because
I'm
a practical person and I'm thinking,
this
is very interesting. I wonder how it's going to work in the real world.
Totally. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, the meta layering was something that I think maybe even went a little bit mad about for a period. There were so many different conjoining, you know, layers. But ultimately, I think that it was trying to kind of put forward the most important kind of thematics. It was a real joy.
Hi, my name is Rolf De Heer. I don't live in Melbourne. I live across the water in Tasmania. But if I did live in Melbourne, my number one radio station would be 3CR because it's about community. And community matters.
And we've just been listening to a conversation I had with Gina Lila Rees about the Dead Parents Club. Fantastic performance. Would have been great to see, but it's great to see it as a documentary as well. It's screening at the Nova on Friday, tomorrow at 6:40. Now we're going to go on to a little conversation that I had with Pippa Samara about her film Wide Horizons.
Pippa, this is about Wide Horizons, your film, which is actually profiling quite a remarkable dance troupe called the Dance North. So tell us about how you got involved in making this film about these people.
I've actually had a long-running friendship with the directors of the company, Kyle Page and Amber Haynes. We've known them, my partner, my wife, danced with them, at least a decade ago, if not more, back in ADT, Australian Dance Theatre. So they know each other very well. And then it was actually, we were living in Europe for 4.5 years and we had just conceived a child and we're ready to come home. And it just so happened that they reached out to us and actually offered Tara a job in the company. And we thought, well, what a beautiful place to start the life of a child. And then they announced, yes, but we are going on this enormous, very ambitious regional tour of Australia, which will take up most of the year. Will you be up for that? And we thought, okay, well, how do we stay together as a family? And then the more I started learning about the company and what they were doing and the kind of work they were creating and the kind of culture they were nurturing, I thought this is something really special, and I really felt that I wanted to find a way to capture what they were doing and share it with a broader audience. So, yeah, applied for funding to go on tour with them really was the first step.
So you're a filmmaker by trade?
I am. I mean, my training is actually in photography, so self-taught filmmaker, but I have been doing it for a number of years now. It's more often been in short format. Short documentaries, dance film. So this was probably my largest undertaking as an individual, feature-length film.
I can see why it was so attractive to you to make a film about these very special people who are doing a very mm-hmm. special thing. From a filmmaking point of view, did you plot it in any sense, or were you really just very alert to anything that might be going to happen?
For the most part, the latter, very alert, very in the space as much as I could be, letting them lead me. And I was very lucky to be let in to such a personal and raw space. And they really welcomed me with such open hearts, such braveness, actually, I would say. Felt very privileged to be invited in the way I was. And yeah, I let the story unfold before me initially. And in that period, I was really learning and listening and capturing and talking and interviewing and just gathering. And then, you know, of course, as I started to form, you know, what this documentary was going to sort of be about at its core, then I started a few extra sort of scenes or requests or shapings that I sort of, yeah, commandeered myself.
That's interesting. This is why it's such an interesting film on so many levels. To begin with, it's a cultural artifact because it's talking about a very high standard dance troupe, but which is in a regional area of Queensland, which is almost unheard of, we'd have to say, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like
mm-hmm,
reaching,
absolutely.
Reaching for the stars. So that completely undermines the common view of where great art comes from, okay, especially in dance. And mm-hmm. then you implode the cultural narrative of overlaid European colonizers onto the space and look at it straight head on. They as a company make reconciliation sound like something that everybody should be part of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they really embed it deeply in the company culture and company values. And I really saw that firsthand as soon as I got there. It was so evident just by the people walking in and out of the building, the people making work, the whole energy of the space, I was blown away by, to be honest. And yeah, I think it's incredibly inspiring the way that they're approaching that reconciliation and the effects that it's having rippling out into that community. And I'm hoping that in the making of this documentary, those ripples can go even further than the localized area that they're really affecting.
Yeah, because it's really part of the Valley of the Beads, because this location is very close to Palm Island, as one of the people talk about. And of course, Australia, white Australia, has a deafening silence when it comes to the past. It's it's like Sleeping Beauty; it has to be whacked on the face to wake up. But then from a filmmaking point of view, and also as a photographer, you're given luscious visualizations to play with, aren't you?
I sure am. Yeah, I mean, as well as the, I mean, dance itself is such an incredible form to capture, and I've been long enamored with it. In fact, as soon as I started shooting dance and dancers many, many years ago, it's been really hard to look outside of it because it just speaks so much to what it is to be human, in particular contemporary dance, because it is so diverse and it is so boundless, and it can touch on so many topics that, yeah, as soon as you freeze it in a still frame, and then, yeah, capturing it in video as well, I feel like you're, yeah, just transported into something that's actually very internal, despite the fact that you're viewing something intrinsically external. It's like a portal to the human soul, the human psyche and experience and everything that comes along with that. So that is always juicy. And then we're adding in these incredible landscapes, these rich Australian, you know, we went to so many regional places across the whole of Australia. And I did also convince them to come out on country with me on several occasions, which was so special and actually a really profound experience for all of us involved, especially out in the centre of Australia in Alice Springs. And then adding in the layers of, you know, in the rehearsal room, which is also a really juicy space, visually, cinematically, but it really gives this kind of insight into how these, like you said, very high level dance works are made and how these performers prepare themselves and step up for the endurance that a long tour demands of you as well, and the impact of that on the body. I had a lot to work with.
And we have to leave it there. If you want to hear the whole conversation that I had with Pippa, you can go to the podcast. That's it for Showreel today. Coming up next is Published or Not. We'll go out with a bit of the Alt Weavers.
Listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.